Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello. And welcome back to the Egyptophile podcast with me, your host, Eris Ptolemy. In this week's episode, we will be discussing Akhenaten, Nefertiti, and their infamous religion. To start off, I would like to thank Egyptologist Dr. Carlene Darnell for taking time to answer a few questions I had regarding her book that she co-wrote with her husband, John, Egypt's Golden Couple, When Akhenaten and Nefertiti Were Gods on Earth. While this interview had major technical difficulties on my end and was unsalvageable, I am grateful for her knowledge and clarification on these truly amazing rulers, and I will be using some of her answers in this podcast episode. Born Amenhotep, younger son of Amenhotep III and his great wife Ti, the man who would become Akhenaten is famous for abandoning the faith of his parents and ancestors and introducing Atenism, a worship centered around Aten, the rays of the sun. You may be wondering, what would cause this abrupt change in a religion that had been worshipped for millennia? And how did it impact Egypt? Did the shift change the course of history as we know it? Well, to understand Akhenaten's motives, we must first try and understand his past. Understanding Akhenaten's past is no easy task. According to not only Dr. Carlene Darnell, but many Egyptologists, Akhenaten's childhood is somewhat unknown. We do know that he had an older brother, Thutmose, as well as four or five sisters. He is believed to have spent most of his childhood surrounded by his sisters and mother. But overall, we do not know much about his youth other than he would have had the typical royal upbringing. He was rarely seen in family monuments and often was not present for festivals such as the Sed festival and other festivals like it. A young Akhenaten must have felt some sort of outcasting from his family, but there is no solid evidence that he was not loved by his parents. There is even some evidence to suggest that his mother, Queen Ti, was one of his advisors early in his reign, and even moved with him to his new city of Akhetaten. She may have even pushed for co-regency between Amenhotep III and Akhenaten, but there is no solid evidence for this. Overall, his childhood and young adulthood seems to have been a happy one, so we cannot look there for this cause of his religious change. According to Egyptologist Donald B. Redford, even in Akhenaten's early reign as Amenhotep IV, there is no real preconceived idea that the man who would become Akhenaten had always wanted to change religion. There are surviving encryptions that show Akhenaten worshipping several gods, including Atum, Osiris, Anubis, Nekbet, Hathor, and even the Eye of Ra. The high priests of Amun are even active until year 4 of Akhenaten's reign, which shows us that he did not immediately plan to abandon his ancestors' religion. We also know that when Akhenaten moved the capital city from Thebes to Akhetaten, his royal titulary honored Thebes, and he even called himself the god ruler of Thebes. Akhenaten also did not destroy the temples to the other gods, and even continued the construction projects that his father began at Karnak's precinct of Amun-Re. Akhenaten even decorated the precinct's third pylon with images of himself worshipping Ra Harakhti, which further proves that this change of religion was not at the forefront of Akhenaten's mind. However, there is a turning point early in Akhenaten's reign that may have sparked the change. On a pylon at Karnak Temple, there is a copy of a speech given by Akhenaten in which he says that the gods are ineffective, had ceased their movements, and that their temples had collapsed. He then contrasted this by stating that the only remaining god was Aten, who was moving continuously and would exist forever. By regnal year 5, Akhenaten was taking steps to establish Aten as Egypt's sole god, and by regnal year 9, Aten was not only declared supreme god, but the only worshipable god. Aten would order for Amun's temples to be defaced and for inscriptions of plural gods to be removed. Images not of the rayed solar disk, which was seen as Aten's essence, was banned, and representations of Aten were then accompanied by hieroglyphic footnotes stating that its representation was to be taken as a representation of something that transcended creation. By as late as year 14 of Akhenaten's reign, Aten was removed from the connection to the solar deities Re Harakhti and Shu. Aten became an amalgamation that incorporated attributes and beliefs of these deities. However, even with this religious change, there is evidence of the other deities still being tolerated, but the funding to their temples was being shifted to the temples of Aten. Amenhotep IV would become Akhenaten in regnal year 5, day 13 of the growing season's fourth month. He changed his name to show his devotion to Aten, and to no longer be associated with the god Amun. There is some debate between the exact meaning of his name. Some believe it means Aten is satisfied, while others believe it could mean effective for the Aten. Whatever the meaning, he had officially started distancing himself from a religion that was beloved by his ancestors. Shortly after his name changed, Akhenaten would decree that the city of Akhetaten, which means horizon of the Aten, would be built halfway between Thebes and Memphis on the east bank of the Nile. While we do not fully know why he established this new capital city, it is believed that he was trying to break with Amun's priests and even the god himself due to conflicts with the priesthood and Amun's followers. The planning of Akhetaten included a great temple, a small temple, royal residences, a records office, and government buildings in the city's center. Many of these buildings were ordered to be built by Akhenaten on the boundary stela that decreed the city's founding. Akhetaten was built quickly, due to the building blocks being substantially smaller than those under previous pharaohs. The Talatat blocks measured around 27 by 27 by 54 centimeters and weighed less than the standard building blocks. Akhetaten's construction meant that work in Thebes would halt, and many builders in the Valley of the Kings were relocated to Akhetaten to help build this glorious city. By Akhenaten's 8th regnal year, Akhetaten was able to be occupied by the royal family, and only Akhenaten's most loyal subjects followed him and his family to this new city. Akhetaten would also feature a more realistic art style compared to other cities. Akhenaten and Nefertiti were often seen embracing one another, kissing and playing with their daughters, and even in depictions of providing offerings to not only Aten, but the people as well. The royal family would be depicted with elongated jaws, distended bellies, and almost alien-like eyes. Akhenaten himself would be portrayed with what looks like female breasts, which has many scholars theorizing that he may have suffered from Marfan syndrome, or even was androgynous like his ancestor Hatshepsut. What we now know as the Amarna period brought about a dark period for Egypt. Dr. Colleen Darnell states that the closure of temples and lack of festivals disrupted the economic system that Egypt had. Many of the revenue brought with the various offerings to the gods was halted. Akhenaten, Nefertiti, and their family were often the only ones allowed to fully venerate Aten, which made the priest's roles almost non-existent, and oracles were not needed. Akhenaten may have even scaled back the military and halted foreign campaigns. However, he was not a pacifist when it came to his diplomatic policies. There is one known military campaign that happened under Akhenaten, when he ordered his viceroy Thutmose to quell a rebellion and raids on settlements that were occurring due to Nubian nomadic tribes. There is also an argument that Akhenaten fought with the Hittites for control of Kadesh, but it was unsuccessful. One may ask, how did Nefertiti play into all this? Well, by all accounts, she was a supportive wife and even helped embrace this new religion. There is some evidence that she held a more elevated role than her predecessors. She may have even had a significant influence when it came to foreign policies and ritual roles, perhaps even on equal footing with her husband. She had an exceptional role in temple offerings and would even hold the title of Nefer-Nefer-Aten, which means beautiful is the beauty of Aten. Nefertiti herself is as mysterious as the full reasoning behind the religious shift. We do not know who her parents were. However, it is theorized that her father was Ai, who would become pharaoh after Tutankhamun. If this is the case, then this means that Nefertiti was possibly Akhenaten's cousin, due to it being theorized that Ai was Ti's brother. Whatever her ancestry, Nefertiti and Akhenaten would have at least 6 daughters together, one of which would have a name synonymous with the mummy franchise, Anaksenamun. Nefertiti was also once considered the mother of Tutankhamun. However, this would be ruled as false due to genetic testing done on mummies discovered from this time period. Akhenaten and Nefertiti's religion was not monotheistic. Dr. Darnell, as well as other Egyptologists, state that instead it was a trinity, with Akhenaten and Nefertiti as gods and vessels for Aten. While it does look monotheistic on the outside, Atenism is another sect of the solar religion that was popular during the 18th dynasty. Even after Akhenaten's death in the 17th year of his reign, his religion would last for another 10 years before it slowly fizzled out. In year 2 of Tutankhaten's reign, he would return to the gods of his ancestors and change his name to Tutankhamun. He would also slowly start to abandon his father's legacy in Akhenaten. Years later, during the reign of Horemheb, Egyptians would start to destroy Aten's temples and reuse the blocks to build new construction projects to the restored deities. Seti I would restore Amun's monuments and order that Akhenaten, Tutankhamun, and Ai be excised from the official list of pharaohs, and even make it appear as though Amenhotep III was immediately succeeded by Horemheb. Ramesses II and his successors would order that Akhetaten be destroyed, and its building materials to be reused across Egypt. The reign of Akhenaten and Nefertiti would bring negativity, and would often be referred to as the time of the enemy, Akhet-Aten. Akhenaten would be lost to history until the 19th century, when his city of Akhetaten would be discovered. And in 1907, a mummy believed to have been his was discovered in KV-55. However, the question of whether or not it is Akhenaten remains. We do know that this mummy was Tutankhamun's father. Since their rediscovery, Akhenaten and Nefertiti remain some of the most popularized and fictionalized historical figures. One of my favorite personal depictions of Akhenaten is in the movie The Egyptian, starring Gene Simmons. While this movie is fictionalized, it truly encompasses the infatuation that Akhenaten had with his new god. Another of my favorite depictions of Akhenaten and Nefertiti is in the DLC of Assassin's Creed Origins, The Curse of the Pharaohs. In this DLC, both Akhenaten and Nefertiti are portrayed as enemies that Bayek of Siwa has to defeat in order to lift a curse on Thebes. The way these two are portrayed in this DLC is truly mind-boggling to me, especially Akhenaten's design, where he is portrayed in the same style as his famous statues, with long arms, elongated face, and a long torso. When I first played the game, I truly felt as though Akhenaten was reaching through the eras in order to remind me of his presence. Nefertiti's portrayal resembles her famous bust. Her beauty and grace is shown with such incredible dignity. I truly believe that Ubisoft honored these two infamous rulers beautifully, and I would highly recommend the DLC to anyone interested in it. Overall, Akhenaten and Nefertiti's legacy has become synonymous with a short-lived religion. Their cause almost forgotten to time because of the drastic shift they brought to their country. However, they truly deserve to be remembered as a couple who truly loved one another and who honored their god even when the times were against them. To refer to them as heretics is rather harsh, because they truly believed their religion would enlighten those who needed it. Instead, we must remember Atenism as a polarizing movement that amplified the already popular solar religions worshipped during the 18th dynasty. Because at the end of the day, without Aten's rays, we truly would be in dark times. Until next time, where we will be discussing the infamous boy king, Tutankhamun. Remember to follow the podcast's Blue Sky and Facebook pages for all podcast updates and to ask questions over there as well. And you can find the podcast on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Also, remember you are loved, and may the goddess Isis protect you.